This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Now it's time for the worst episode of my favorite episode ever podcast with Michael Schneider and Pan Aldon.
From Variety, I'm Michael Schneider.
Now the star and executive producer of FX's critically acclaimed Better Things, Pamela Adlon grew up on television. As a young actress, she appeared on series such as The Facts of Life and The Jeffersons. She remembers fondly that era's habit of doing cheesy, very special episodes.
Television is just like part of my DNA. So when I think about my favorite episode, what comes to mind is it was always like, you know, on a special episode. Like it was always the special episode of stuff that freaked me out and that I loved so much.
On this edition of the podcast, we talked to Pamela Adlon about one particular Good Time special episode that stands out in her mind. And we also recount her memorable turn as a hoodlum on The Jeffersons. Plus, how she tackles important subjects without going that very special route on Better Things. It's my favorite episode.
My favorite episode. Let's talk TV. My favorite episode makes me so happy. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Variety's My Favorite Episode. Let's give it up for your host, Michael Schneider.
Thank you, DJ Omar Khan. It is another edition of My Favorite Episode. This time out, we're talking to Pamela Adlon about TV's string of very special sitcom episodes from the 70s and 80s, including the Good Times episode, The Evans Get Involved, Parts 1 and 2. That two-part episode, which aired in Season 5 on September 21, 1977, featured the introduction of Penny, played by Janet Jackson. In the episode, Penny follows J.J. home and eventually Wilona, played by Janet Dubois, and Thelma, played by Bernadette Stanis, discover that she's been abused by her mother.
Didn't I tell you to come straight home from school?
Yes, Mama.
But you disobeyed me, didn't you?
Yes, Mama.
You make me very unhappy, Penny. And you know what happens to children that make their mamas unhappy. I locked it. I knew that would be the first place you tried to hide.
Please, Mama, I promise I won't be a bad girl anymore. Please, I won't be a bad girl anymore. Please, I promise. Please. Oh, no, Mama, please. Please don't do it. Please.
For Pamela Adlon, that show is a symbol of a different time in sitcoms, one she even participated in herself as a young performer. It was a different era, and comedies like her FX series Better Things take a more sophisticated style of storytelling. But it's still fun to go back and reminisce about those times. We recently sat down with Adlon to discuss her TV inspirations, her close-knit set, and how Better Things is the right family comedy for this generation. But first, we talked about what else but podcasts.
You were saying that you've been invited to dozens of podcasts, hundreds. Everyone
on
has
the
a podcast.
Way here. On the way here, I got a text. Now she's going to know if she hears this. Literally 2:41. I know you have more than enough on your plate, but I still wanted to ask, would you be into coming on mine and Missy Pyle's podcast where we crassly talk about how fucking hard it is to be a parent? I mean, it's your show with no visuals and we only have one kid each. You could call in and chat. You don't have to come into the studio. No big deal if you have no interest whatsoever. Constance Zimmer. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, can't. Thank you, Emmy gods, for bringing you here.
Thank you. Well, I like to. I like the subject matter.
I found that it's been fun so far in getting people to talk about sort of what they were standing. Because that's what the kids say now, standing. as they were growing
up. Oh, yes. As the youth, they say, I stan. Now it's time for the worst episode of My Favorite Episode Ever podcast with Michael Schneider and Pan Aldon.
So this is the first time that I've had a guest come in, though, and I have no idea what episode they're going to tell me.
I was supposed to tell you?
But it's okay, because now it's going to be a surprise, and it's going to be even more interesting.
Okay, so it's just a wide span of television. Like, television is just, like, part of my DNA. So when I think about my favorite episode, what comes to mind is it was always, like, you know, on a special episode. Like, it was always the special episode of stuff that freaked me out and that I loved so much.
Yeah.
You know, and then when I think about, like, my favorite episode, it's not necessarily something that was great, you know?
Yeah.
But anything that kind of cracked my head open and made me think about life and hard things and things that were uncomfortable. It's like, I remember the episode of Good Times when Penny got burned by the iron, when Janet Jackson played Penny and she was being abused by her mother.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
That one I wasn't a Good Times viewer, unfortunately.
I don't know. All the Norman Lear shows, you know, and Good Times was a spinoff of All in the Family.
Right, right.
Also, Maude was a spinoff of All
in the Family. It had like five different spinoffs.
Exactly.
Jeffersons as well.
Which I was on.
You were on the Jeffersons.
I was on the Jeffersons.
That's amazing.
I robbed the dry cleaners. Yeah, that, I mean, you know, listen, the Try a Little Tenderness episode of the Jeffersons, that was my episode. Louise thought she could turn around some street kids, and George was like, no, you can't. And then he caught me robbing the dry cleaners, and they take me up to their apartment with my other street rat friend, and they turned him around, and I still, at the end, I picked George's pocket. and Wheezy looked at him and says, you were right, George.
Yeah.
And he said, give me a kiss. And so,
and then what would Florence the maid say?
Oh, she made all kinds of cracks about me being, you know, a hoodlum or something like that. But, you know, so I think about that. I have to tell you that I remember the episode of All in the Family when Archie's friend came out to him.
Mm.
And he's like, so you and I have known each other for how long, Archie? He's like, long time. They're like sitting there having drinks. And he comes out to him and Archie, you know, in a very subtle way. But Archie really just kind of acknowledges it. And it was like earth shattering. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I remember the episode of, and this is really queer, of 30-something. And I totally watched every episode of this show when I was in my 20s, and me and my friend Susie.
Yeah, yeah. Preparing for the next decade.
I think so. Yeah. It was early 20s. Me and Susie Balaban would watch 30-something. And so the thing that was amazing is that Michael and Hope were married. So Michael was a Jew and Hope was a Shiksa goddess. And they had this argument in the holiday episode, and she wanted to get a Christmas tree, and he was like, I'm a Jew. I never grew up with a tree. I can't have a tree in my house. And they get into a big fight. And then at the end of the episode, it's like the gift of the Magi. He comes home with a Christmas tree, and she's lighting a menorah. I could cry right now talking about it.
Oh, those boomers.
I love it so much. And then, of course, I don't know if anybody said the fly episode of Breaking Bad, which is...
Yeah, still like the bottle episode of all bottle episodes.
I don't know what that means.
It's like half of... That's where I think a lot of us learn the term bottle episode, where it's pretty much just takes place in one location.
It's just in a lab, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it's... And you know, the reason why they do it is because they've blown their budget for the season, so they had to do an episode that was pretty much in one place since they couldn't do any location. But they wrote this beautiful episode that all took place in the lab.
Oh, it's unbelievable because it is. It's like a reboot. And he's talking to Mr. White, and Mr. White is dealing with Jesse. But it's all this POV of the fly, and it's shot... like I died. I actually died.
Yeah.
I thought it was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it's challenging to, you know, when you're if that's true, if there was a budgetary constraint and they were like, we're shutting it down or something, it makes you really kind of get creative.
Yeah.
You know, I just watch TCM all the time. All the time. It's on a loop in my house.
Happy 25th anniversary, TCM.
Exactly. And so my friend Mario Cantone is in town. He did something. He presented The Wife with Jennifer Grant.
Mm-hmm.
And I told Mario, we were talking about it the other night, that, you know, when you don't, when you can't curse and when you're dealing with, you know, the code of the studio system at that time, it's like the writing was so elevated.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's what it feels like, you know, and I deal with that on my show, Better Things. Like, I have to deal with financial constraints, and it actually, you can't believe, like, I shot downtown L.A. for Chicago, you know, in this season, and it's really amazing what you can accomplish, because that is the episode that I remember the title. And I remember what they said. I remember how cinematic it was, and the feeling of being in that lab, and the stakes of having it be clean, and one little fly in the ointment. It was all of the tiny details stick with me.
Yeah, yeah. That's when the writing really has to shine.
Yeah.
That's when you know that you're on a show that shines because of. You know, Vince Gilligan and his team.
That's right.
You know, and you know, it's interesting because there is this sort of conversation going on now about, you know, now that we're in this age of streaming and premium TV where, you know, creatives and showrunners are given more leeway. They can do longer episodes. They don't have to do act breaks anymore on streaming. And there are certain things that have always constrained shows that are sort of being let loose now. And, of course, the debate is, well, that's great, and that allows creators to do a lot more than they could before, but sometimes there was a lot of great stuff that came out of those constraints that, you know, forced writers to, you know, tone things up or tighten things up, or there are certain things that you couldn't do, and so that forced you to do something that ended up being even more creative.
It's true. It's, you know, I'm on FX, so we have act breaks. So when I push the envelope in terms of, you know, running time, they say, you know what, you can go 25 minutes, but you're going to need 4-act breaks or something like that. You know, we prefer, you know, everybody prefers it to be a 21-minute, 22-minute episode. But because we are a network that has commercials, we're dealing with that.
Yeah.
And I mean, I personally can't watch my show on network television. If somebody's watching it and hasn't seen it before, I'll have a fucking heart attack. It's like the worst thing ever. Because I'm like, oh my God! You know, because literally, like, my show is about staying in this feeling and sustaining it. And then, you know, then a Stater Brothers commercial comes on and somebody gets up and goes to the bathroom and somebody gets up and people start talking. I'm like, no, we're not doing that. We're not talking right now.
Yeah.
So that's really hard when you, when everybody's coming up with this streaming mentality, you know, but also it's like appointment television is a very exciting thing. And it's something that's like, is it a dinosaur? Yeah, it might be a dinosaur. But for me, I couldn't wait for Game of Thrones last night.
Yeah.
Like, I was dying. And please don't tell me about it because I didn't stay awake. no slam to the episode. I have a busy life.
I understand. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, I like that everybody was excited about Game of Thrones premiere last night. That it was last night and that we were all gearing up and ready to watch it. And I like that everybody knows that my show is on Thursdays and they wait for the episodes to roll out. That's a sexy, fun thing to have in your life. people need things to look forward to as opposed to just like, I mean, you can have everything. You just shoot your whole wad. It's like you're in a heroin factory and you do heroin all day. No, that's not a good example.
Well, well, what it is, you know, it's you know, you work so hard on all these episodes. They finally come out. And this has been the debate for a while now with the streaming and the dumping all the episodes at once. So then you give it to the world for one weekend and people binge it. And then that's it for another year.
They forgot all about
it. As opposed to reminding people for at least 10 weeks in a row or 12 weeks or you know, 25 if you're still on broadcast that you're here and you're a part of the pop culture that long.
I think that is so, you know, it's the Tao, you know, it's the Tao. You have to, it's the anticipation of, you know, it in the Tao of Pooh. They talk about how Pooh loves honey, but the anticipation of eating the honey is even better than the actual honey. So it's like, I don't know that in our culture and now people have any patience. And people have said to me to my face, oh, I'm just going to wait until the whole season's over so I can binge it. I'm like, all right. Okay, honey.
See you in 10 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. But I wish there was a way that we could, you know, reintroduce. You know, it would be great if my show could be on a thing you waited every week, but you could just watch it without commercials. No offense. It would be amazing. But, I think we as a society could use a little bit of patience.
It's interesting because at FX, you've got one foot in the past the way TV's always been done. But then also there is, you know, FX does, it seems like, a pretty good job in allowing its creators to, like you mentioned, if you want to do a show that's a little longer than usual, that's great. And most importantly, what's interesting in the past couple of years is FX has sort of allowed swears. Even the F-bomb, which is astounding on a commercial network.
But what were they doing? Like, weren't they swearing, like, on The Shield?
No. No, they weren't allowing. They found interesting ways to get around it. But it's only in the past maybe 5 years that it started slowly. There was like an episode of People vs. OJ where they allowed one F-bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of looked around like, well,
nobody
complained.
Said anything.
No one said anything.
Yes!
So let's open the floodgates.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I like having that. You know, in this particular case, because of the fact that there is a little bit of leeway, and I always said from the beginning, I don't want the adults to swear flagrantly. I think that's boring, it's being done on every other network. You know, I was on, you know, HBO and Showtime before, so. We could do anything we wanted. It's kind of like what I was saying about, you know, when the studio was making movies with the code, you know, you have to be able to be more clever than just, you know, dropping F-bombs everywhere. And I always thought it would be more interesting if you hear the kids swearing more than the adults on my show.
Yeah.
And so, I had quite a bit of that in season one, and then I just had a scene in this season. But I have fought for certain placement of the F-bomb that really it mattered in the story. You know, like I had the Mormon mom in my show in Duke's Chorus. She dropped an F-bomb, and it was jarring, and there was a reason for it. I just had a scene in my show this season where Usman Ali plays my doctor, and he drops like 30 F-bombs in the scene because that's who he is.
Yeah.
So they've been very, you know, they listen. There's a word that they use. It's called tonnage. They just say we're trying to get away from the tonnage, like too much of it. But it definitely they let me. But you know, it can't be, you know, exploitive or anything like that.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. It has to be, sort of be organic. Yeah, with the doctor, for example, it's just it's a weird character. It's an uncomfortable character who like is inappropriate.
Yes.
Yeah. So that made sense. And then of course the kids. That's a whole that
when they're swearing at each other.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And what's funny about that is, you know, one of the sort of side storylines this season is your character shooting the movie, and mm-hmm. there's a child actor involved, and you know, the parent, mm-hmm. of course, could care less about the kid's well-being.
Yes.
And the ongoing debate, and you having been a child actor, mm-hmm. you know, this is something that's personal to you as well, and it's sort of interesting to explore that additionally. And then you have kid actors on your show,
yes,
who are asked to swear.
So that's
an interesting sort of paradox for you. Where do you fall on that, and what is your sort of feeling on kids and actors and what they can and can't do, and parents and that whole mishigosh?
Well, you know, it's funny because it depends, you know, where they're from. You know, I mean, Hannah Alligood, who plays Frankie, my middle daughter, her family's from Alabama. So this is not normal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, when we first started, there were things that were like, you know, it was kind of like a process that we went through, like we had to kind of get through. And I let all the moms know that they could trust me and that I would never put their kids in any kind of a weird position. But there was one thing in particular that that Hannah's mom and I were discussing for about 3 months before we got to the scene and in season one. And, you know, I mean, I had to pull out all the cards. I was like, okay, so there's this movie called Taxi Driver and Jodie Foster is the star of it. And she was 12 years old, which is how old Hannah was when she did my show. So, you know, I mean, if you're from a place that's totally different to you, you have to find the place where you say, well, she's playing an LA kid. This is the way LA kids talk in this world. You know, if somebody's conservative, religious wise or whatever, that can come into play when you're acting. But when we put out the breakdowns, it said on the breakdown, please don't submit anybody unless you know that this is a show with adult content and the kids, you know, we're being very candid. So it worked out. And the amazing thing is working with her and her family, you know, they're Christians. You know, and that's as far away from the way I was brought up and my beliefs. And I have to tell you, they have been the kindest. Like, I'm going to cry right now.
Yeah.
I love them so much. And we did that together. We went through that together, you know, and watching her grow as an actor in particular, from season one, like the first day I met her, plucked her fresh out of Birmingham, brought her to LA, had her say some things that most people would be so shocked. She was unbelievable. And every year she just gets better. And she's like Buster Keaton, that kid.
Yeah.
She's unbelievable.
Now, these all three young women on your show.
Yeah.
I mean, they're astounding. You really lucked out in terms of casting.
So, thank you.
And you know, it's interesting you mentioned like the family, like they come from a conservative background, but yet mm-hmm. I'm sure they can see they can still relate to better things. I mean, it's because it's a lot more than just a show set in Los Angeles. It's about relationships and family.
Yeah.
And
they love it. You know, I mean, I think that, you know, all the kids have and their families have thanked me for helping them, you know, Mikey's mom, you know, after season one was like, oh my God, thank God you have this scene. I don't have to have this conversation with her. And then Olivia's mom, the same. And, you know, being able to like live out their fantasies, and Olivia cursing in the parking lot with Hannah this season. And, you know, and then, I mean, Mikey having to go through all these different changes, and it's just incredible watching them grow. I mean, they were like, I mean, Olivia is, she came to me like a 90-year-old man, you know, but like Hannah and Mikey were like zygotes. Yeah. And so they, watching them change and flourish has been an unbelievable experience.
Yeah. That's funny. I imagine the parents like, Pamela, can you just go ahead and do the sex talk? For like, it just would make it easier.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Like,
if you could do that, that'd be a great.
In a moment, Pamela Adlon on growing up in the business, her big animation voiceover career, and the long-term plan for better things. From Variety, this is My Favorite Episode.
This is Daniel Holloway. Join me every Friday for TV Take, Variety's podcast about the television business. In every episode, we feature interviews with stars and showrunners from today's hit shows, as well as conversations with Variety journalists about the key TV headlines of the day. Subscribe or download to TV Take wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. It's My Favorite Episode. I'm Michael Schneider. Pamela Adlon is our guest, and we're talking all things TV. Now in its third season, Adlon's Better Things not only stars her, but she also writes the FX show, and she directed all of its episodes this year. Adlon plays Sam Fox, a single mother and working actor raising her three daughters, Max, played by Mikey Madison, Frankie, played by Hannah Allgood, and Duke, played by Olivia Edward, in Los Angeles. Celia Imrie plays her mother, Phil, an eccentric who lives across the streets. The show is a slice of life and extremely relatable for anyone navigating family, work, friends, and more.
Are you aware of the fact that you owe me an apology and you're withholding it? Or did you forget? What's the matter with you and with your son? What?
Mom, come on.
Do you know that you drove onto a school parking lot on your cell phone without barely looking up? Do you know how many kids you almost hit?
Get away from me.
No. 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 I would like to step outside.
Step outside?
Yes. I would like you and I to step outside on the playground so I can beat you up. Just like your psycho son did to my daughter.
Growing up, Adlon was inspired by some of TV's most iconic creators.
Well, in some ways, it's bringing it back to good times and those family shows from the 70s.
Yeah.
This is sort of, I mean, you're doing the modern version of a family show.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, all those shows. I mean, One Day at a Time, Good Times, The Jeffersons, Maude, All in the Family. I was obsessed with those shows. And then I was obsessed, you know, growing up with like Sonny and Cher, and when Carol Burnett would be on, it was like, it was everything to me. I loved all of that stuff. You know, I ate as much television as my parents let me watch.
Yeah. Yeah. Was there anything, I mean, do you just, as far as you remember, always loved television or?
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I loved television. I loved cartoons and animation and the Wacky Races. And I learned how to do voices from, you know, Yogi Bear and Snagglepuss and, you know, Marvin the Martian. And, you know, I mean, I just like everything. The witch with the bobby pins coming out of her hair. And Marvin the Martian, isn't it just delightful? And all of that. It was my favorite. Exit stage right. I remember Snagglepuss and all of those voices are like in my head. Boris and Natasha and all of that. It's just, and the fact that I'm able to do that now is kind of unbelievable.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah. So you were always a performer. I mean, that was always you were always kind of a creative.
I think so. You know, even though I was convinced I was going to be a lawyer when I was a kid, and I don't know now if that's something that my parents implanted in me, like a chip, like, you're going to be a lawyer. You know what I mean? Because I remember people would say, you're going to be an actress. And I would say, no, I'm going to be a lawyer. You're so wrong.
Yeah.
But I don't really understand why I thought that.
Well, and also, did you think that was beneath, like, that maybe being an actress wasn't?
Yeah, I didn't like that.
Yeah.
I didn't like anybody making, it felt like a judgment or something like, oh, we can't take you seriously, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like it wasn't really something to be so proud of, because it was more like an insult. If I think about it, I'm having a memory now. Of, you know, I guess I got into a fight with my dad or something, because we fought a lot until I moved out of my house. And I remember him clapping his hands and saying, oh, you're such a good actress. And it was the most, it was like the meanest slam.
Right. It's a dig. When a parent says that to their kid, it's usually a dig.
And I was like, oh, fuck, that is the worst thing anybody could ever say to me. You know, and... You know, now look at me.
Exactly. And I feel like I may have even said to my kids before, here's your Oscar.
Yeah. Oh, no. That's the worst.
It's such
no.
a parent thing to say.
Yes.
It's so terrible. But hey, I mean, obviously you know, you're a writer, you're a producer, director, star. It's so, you know, back then I don't think people even thought about being a multi-hyphenate the way they do now.
Yeah,
you were just one thing.
Absolutely. I mean, my dad was always a writer producer, so I grew up as the child of a hyphenate.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that was something that was very interesting, because I remember him being a writer in solitary, and then being on stage and producing the shows that he produced. And then I guess he would, I don't know if he was, I think he was more of a creative producer than a line producer. But yeah, and my mother was always kind of working and supporting us as well. She was doing real estate, she was a travel agent, she was working for a composer, she worked for a publisher. So,
yeah. But back then you didn't have, I mean, you had Carol Burnett, you had a few sort of like performer, writer, you know. Like,
oh, yeah.
All the above, but you didn't have many.
Yeah. Carol Burnett, huge, huge to me.
Yeah.
Marlo Thomas. When Marlo Thomas came out with Free to Be You and Me,
mm-hmm.
my dad was producing a show called AM New York, and I was supposed to be on the show with Marlo Thomas. They were going to get like four little kids to be in there. Marlo, like, just, you know, rapping with the kids.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, up with people.
Exactly. Yeah. And she and I both got sick. And so she sent me a signed copy of Free to Be You and Me. And Free to Be You and Me was like everything for me.
Yeah.
I mean, that completely blew my brains out. I just was like, oh my God, this is everything. And she shepherded it, she produced it, she did it, she got all these people together. Alan Alda was on it, you know, Bobby Morse, Diana Ross, Michael Jackson. It was, oh my God, it was everything.
Yeah.
So significant moment for me. Carol Burnett, Marlo Thomas, really just kind of, wow, people could do that. When Tina Fey came out, I was like, this woman is doing all of this. When Lena Dunham did Girls, you know, and I'm talking about women,
yeah.
You know, I'm remembering Norman Lear having all of these shows going at one time, and being aware of that. But
yeah.
Significantly looking at women being pioneers.
Yeah.
Is something that, you know, is kind of unforgettable. So, yeah, that was a big deal. Carol Burnett was a big deal. Cher was a big deal
yeah.
to me, because she took the piss out of herself. And she was gorgeous, funny, talented. And she would play second banana to Sonny, who was a second banana. You know what I mean? Right. It was unbelievable, like, to see the humility of her early career, really just significant impact on my life. That was a big one. And then, you know, the Electric Company and the women who are on the Electric Company and on Sesame Street, you know.
Rita Moreno on Electric Company.
Unbelievable. It was unbelievable.
Yeah. And look at Rita Moreno, still going.
Yes.
Still going. Yes. Stronger than ever. So speaking of Norman Lear, so going back to Good Times real quick, since that's the show that I know keeps popping up into your mind in these sort of very special episodes.
Yeah.
So take me back to that episode and Janet Jackson and the time. That was pretty amazing that, like, you know, here, you know, the Jackson sister is on this TV show.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I should have done my research and rewatched it before I did your podcast. But what I can remember is that they took her in, and that not Florida, but the who was Esther Rolle, but the one who played the younger mom. It was I forget her name. I could Google.
Yeah,
it
not J.J. Walker.
No, not. But. She was talking to her, and Janet Jackson played this character named Penny, and she was a little girl.
Yeah.
And she saw her hand, and she grabbed her hand, and she said, "Wait, let me see your hand. What is that?" And it was like a triangle burn mark on her arm, and she was trying to cover it up. And then they figured out that she was getting burned by her foster parent, I want to say, or her mom. But all of those shows that were gritty and that talked about scary subject matter was my favorite thing.
Well, that was the heyday of those kind of, like, when you think about some of the dark episodes of, say, Different Strokes or Facts of Life or those kind of shows where
I was on Facts of Life too.
There was the episode where I think it was Blair and a couple other people were at a coffee shop and a pimp tried to, like, recruit them.
Oh my God, I wasn't in that episode. but yeah, you know, those kinds of things. Yeah. Like I know that they're done as cautionary tales. So it's kind of, I go the opposite of that in my show, yet I want to have the cautionary tale. Like, that's why I tell stories in the way that I do. Because I feel that Janet Dubois.
Okay, yeah.
Thank you. It was killing me.
Yeah.
I don't like to hit people over the head. So a lot of those very special episodes were like, you know, just hitting you over the head.
Yeah, it was a different kind of storytelling back then.
It was. So, like, the way, like, I talk about, you know, power abuse on set in my show this season. And I just show kind of Sam getting, you know, tossed around with all the crew and the cast, and even her dad's like, don't be a whistleblower, don't give away, you know.
Ghost dad,
Yeah, exactly. But ghost dad. I like that there's just something that kind of just sits there, and it's a really uncomfortable moment, and it's not completely resolved. So those episodes had a lot of impact on me.
Yeah, you're right. What's interesting about those episodes back then, everything had to be completely resolved.
Oh, so, yes.
You know.
Pimps in jail.
Yeah. Gordon Jump is arrested for kidnapping Kimberly.
Oh, my God. He was? That's hilarious. So, that name, you just pulled that out.
Yeah, that was another very famous, very special episode of
Different
Strokes.
Was he on Different Strokes?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
I do miss those days. I feel like it was a simpler time.
Yeah, it was.
Hey, I have one more question for you, because a couple years ago, 1 or 2 years ago, there was talk of bringing back King of the Hill, and then that talk sort of went away. Have you heard anything more?
You know what? We did a 20th or a 20th anniversary of King of the Hill. Yeah. at Sketchfest in San Francisco a couple years ago. And so we all got together, Kathy, Najimy, Greg Daniels, Mike Judge, who else was there? Root was there, Johnny Hardwick. And we did a reading, and we were all saying, everybody's like hitting us up, like saying what, you know, I think that they would be open to it, but I have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe in this, now that Disney owns
it. I just hope they, oh, that's so crazy. That's true.
Yeah. Disney loves its IP, so you never know.
Yeah, exactly. I just hope that they call it like Schmang of the Phil, so my ex-husband doesn't get any new residuals or payment. I did call it Ching of the Mill in the first episode of my show this season, season three.
Mm-hmm.
Guy recognizes me on the plane, and he's sitting next to me, and he's kind of bowing with the book, and I look at him, I say, don't worry, I don't think you're a terrorist. He's Indian.
Yeah.
And he goes, I know who you are. Ugh, I love you. He says, I know you're a rooster on Ching of the Mill. I think I just put that as a placeholder in the script, and he ended up saying it. Yeah. So I just kept it in.
That's
exactly.
A nice nod. Nice nod.
But can I talk about my favorite episode of my show?
Yes. Yes. So what is your favorite episode of your show?
I don't know. Do you have a favorite episode of my show?
Well, I think I told you most recently, because I can only remember the past year or so.
Yeah.
Was the episode with your daughters, like your two youngest, screaming at each other.
Oh, yeah,
And swearing, because it reminds me of my two young.
Amazing.
My two kids. And like I imagine if I had similarly said, okay, you have a minute. You can yell at, say whatever you want to the other, just like, and then after that, shut up.
Yeah.
Get it out of your system. And but I just know what would happen.
You're going to use it.
Yeah,
you have to.
My youngest would like probably swear up a storm,
yeah,
where my oldest would be like, what? Where did that come from?
Oh,
and
my God.
My wife and I just were dying.
Unbelievable.
Dying at that.
Well, it's a good tool.
Yeah.
You know, I'm giving people tools to raise their kids. But yeah, I loved that. That one this season, I loved, God, you know, I got to say, I of course, love Graduation so much from last year.
Mm-hmm.
I love Only Women Bleed from season one. I love White Rock and Eulogy. And there's a bunch this season. I love Jeopardy, the one that was just on, and Toilet that was just on. The thing is that I'm able to say that I love these episodes because my network gives me so much freedom to make them, and
yeah,
nobody's like riding me and keeping their foot on my neck. It's just a kind of a joy,
yeah,
to work that way.
Yeah, it just dawned on me that you're now part of Disney too, since FX is now owned by Disney. So
I know, but you know what? I've been working for Disney for years because I've done all the cartoons. You know,
yeah,
I'm a Tinkerbell fairy. I'm Vidia, and I've done, you know, I was in Recess and Jungle Cubs and Pepper Ann, and so I've been.
Yeah, your voice has been you're a Disney, mm-hmm, regular already.
That's
so
right.
Now it's just a larger part of the company as well.
Yeah, I just when they were doing it, I was like, so does this mean we could like get VIP and I could get into that club that serves booze?
Right, Club 33.
Exactly.
Do you get any sort of perks?
Exactly. I'm hoping
early look at the new Star Wars land or
exactly
something. So well, that'll be great. So the standard question that a show in success, you know, can continue on for a while. I mean, what do you think the story of Better Things will ultimately be? How many seasons? What do you sort of have a plan in mind, or is it sort of open ended?
I can't. You know, it's unbelievable to me that I just got picked up for season four, because it's so rare for shows to make it to a season four anymore, and I think that because it's a contained thing, that I don't know. I swear to God, 2 weeks ago, I was like, okay, this is great. We could wrap it up. I know how the season ends. This is a perfect ending. They're not going to pick up my show. It's fine. Then they picked it up, and I was like, oh, my God. I was saying before, God willing or God forbid, my show gets picked up. But I am excited to make more. I don't know, you know, how many years, like, I'm going to be able to see my face in front of the camera. But, you know, I'm more interested in other people's faces than my own. So,
yeah, well, I hope we see you for many more years to come.
Thank you.
You're not going to hide behind a mic only forever, right?
So. But isn't it fun, Michael? Like, this is the safe place. I'm holding onto the mic stand.
It is. It is. It's fun to eat a microphone.
Exactly.
So, well, Pamela, thank you so much for stopping by. And
thank you so much.
I'm going to go rewatch that Good Times episode tonight now just to.
Oh, yes. Me too. So, I should have watched it before I came on here. Sorry. Sorry. Not really sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
You're slightly busy.
Exactly.
So
I got to get through the Game of Thrones from last night.
There you go.
I don't want anybody to talk to me. La, 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 la.
You've managed to get through the day without it so
exactly.
far.
Exactly.
Stay off Twitter.
I know. I am.
Well, great. Great. Thanks for stopping by. Thanks, Pamela.
Thank you so much.
And that's it for this edition of My Favorite Episode. Join us again next time as we once again explore another guest pick. And be sure to subscribe to My Favorite Episode on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or anywhere you download podcasts. Also, head on over to Variety.com for your daily fix of TV news, analysis, and reviews. I'm Michael Schneider, and we'll see you again next time.